Welcome to The Portal. I'm Melissa Tipton, author and Jungian witch, and today I've got two things planned for our time together. The first is I want to share a handful of Jungian magic tidbits that I couldn't quite fit into your dream work lessons, things that will help you interpret your dreams even more skillfully so you can really use these nighttime insights to accelerate waking life changes. The second thing, which is related to crafting your best life one choice at a time, we'll get to that in a bit. If you stick around to the end, I'll also be sharing one of my favorite snippets from Jung's collected works, something that I return to when I'm feeling stuck or lost or like I've tried everything I can think of. It's really a beautiful passage. One of the most helpful things about dreams is they can show you your relationship to something or someone in your life from a perspective that isn't readily accessible to the waking ego. Said another way, while the ego might fudge the details so we're seeing things in a way that keeps us aligned with the status quo, our dreams, on the other hand, will tell it like it is. One way we can really tap into these potent insights is by understanding an uncomfortable truth about dreams. In a very real sense, dreams are a criticism. Not in a mean girl sort of way, but in a, hey, this is what you're missing way. Dreams are showing us what the ego is not. What this means in practice is that if our dream interpretations are essentially pats on the back and vague affirmations like, you're doing great, keep it up, I can pretty much guarantee that there's more to uncover. There's more that the dream is offering. Now, this isn't to say that dreams don't ever point out areas where we've created positive change. They absolutely do. But their primary function is to bring balance to the psyche. And they do this by supplying content that the ego is leaving out, but which is vital for our growth and development. The same is true for tarot cards, at least in the way I approach them. If we're getting messages that basically amount to good things are coming, hang in there, or something you could print on one of those motivational posters, chances are we're not allowing the cards to deliver their full message. The cards can absolutely deliver hope, but in my experience, they typically do so by shifting our perspective in a way that then changes how we think, feel, and behave, and not simply with feel-good boosts that don't tell us how to participate in our own evolution. Shifting to the POV that the very purpose of dreams and divination is to show us what the ego is missing can be challenging. After all, the ego is probably overlooking or rejecting this information in the first place because it feels threatened by it. Maybe this information will alter how we see ourselves or other people. It might challenge storylines we've been living by for a very long time. It might invite us to take actions that feel uncomfortable, but this is how we grow. For me, one of the ways I help soften the ego's defenses is by adopting an attitude of, it's okay, I don't know this stuff. There's nothing shameful about not knowing, and hey, how great is it that we have avenues like dreams and divination to fill in the gaps? Not knowing is just part of life. There will always be things, so many things, that we don't know. But digging in our heels and refusing to learn, that upends the natural process of growth and evolution. So once we cozy up to the idea that dreams are showing us stuff that's missing in our waking stance, one area that's especially fruitful to explore is recurring dream elements. In one of your spellcasting lessons this month, you'll be getting a bonus, a spellcasting playbook. And in this, I give an example of a cash register, which is a recurring element in my dreams. In short, any dreams in which the cash register appears are showing me my relationship to money flowing into and out of my life, and it's been very interesting to witness how the cash register has changed over time. For example, in earlier dreams, the cash register was an old, rusty antique with tons of confusing, poorly labeled buttons. Think about this. The age of the cash register suggests that this is something that has been passed down. These are ancestral money dynamics. And the mind-boggling interface definitely tracks with how I was taught to relate to money, with lots and lots of confusion. As I worked with my dreams and divination to find tiny action steps that I could take in waking life, the cash register began to change. It went from this old, clunky antique to these sleeker computer interfaces. And then the dream began to highlight other aspects of my financial picture. Parental figures appeared, arguing over purchases. One parent thought it was a waste of money, while the other derived so much joy from the purchase. And while they were arguing, the cash register interface grew more and more complicated in the dream. How useful! This led me to work with the parts in my own inner system, which are modeled after my parents, parts that argue, often unconsciously, about my purchasing decisions. leaving me flustered and unable to make wise choices. By journaling your own dreams over time, you will start to notice recurring elements. And this is possible even if you're not journaling your dreams every single day. If you can journal your dreams even just a couple times a week, you'll be giving yourself a wealth of insights tailor-made for you that you can work with. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of writing things down. It's tempting to think we can just remember this stuff, but there's something about the act of translating dreams from thought to page that elicits a whole new layer of insight. I see this as reinforcing a productive channel of communication from your ego and the unconscious. You'll also notice things that otherwise are easy to miss. For example, without writing down my dreams, I never would have noticed a particular recurring dream setting. After about four of these dreams, I realized I kept finding myself in rectangular buildings that often looked very different from one another at first glance, but they all had a central enclosed courtyard. And the dream action would take place around this courtyard, but never in it. By looking at my personal associations with this setting, as you learned how to do in your dreamwork lessons, I was able to access some very useful dream insights. So, in your own dreams, have you noticed recurring characters, human, animal, or otherwise? Are there specific objects, like my dream cash register, that keep showing up? What about certain settings, even if they look different, like a number of dreams happening in restaurants, or in a busy city, or at a home from your childhood? Or how about recurring plots, like trying to get somewhere but you can't find your way, or being in a group of people but then you're separated and you can't find your way back to them? Use the dream interpretation techniques from your lessons to explore these recurring elements over time. Once you understand more of their personal significance, how can you relate this to your waking life? For instance, my cash register dreams gave me certain interactions and a particular feeling of confusion and being rushed, plus other clues to be on the lookout for in my daily routine. One of the things that distinguishes Jungian dream analysis is its emphasis on the developmental aspect of dreams. Rather than seeing the dreams purely as memories of the past and grapplings with the present, dreams point toward future potentials, potentials that we can then usher into our waking life. I love how Jungian analyst Verena Kast in her book, The Dynamics of Symbols, describes this. She says, quote, "The symbol, meaning the dream, presents not only memory to the individual, but also, and this is very important, the expectation of something more in life," end quote. The expectation of something more in life, so beautifully said. The process of individuation, or becoming more of who we truly are, is central to Jungian psychology. And dreams provide unfailing guideposts leading us along that journey. In a 2019 interview, Kast was asked what initially drew her to Jung's work, and she replied, "Well, I think it was very much this, the image of the human being not seen from the deficits, but from the potentials. This corresponds with Jung's idea that life is creative, that something creative permeates the whole universe, but also the whole individual personality. And if you are connected with this creative urge, then you can transform, get whole, or you can get a good life in a way," she says. So in using dreams as a rudder to navigate the waters of individuation, one of the techniques you learned in your dreamwork lessons was how to use personal associations to interpret dream elements. And I want to talk more about that here. This is a little different from free association, where you take something from your dream, say a character or a piece of the plot, and you riff on anything that comes to mind. Free association can get us off in the weeds, losing sight of what the dream is presenting us with. So here's a helpful tip. As you work with personal associations, regularly check in with how you feel. A relevant association will feel zingier, more interesting, and it will often lead to deeper and deeper connections. I walked through this in one of the lessons with my dream about the retreat where the woman is showing off all the fancy art supplies, none of which are ones that I actually need. I traced this dream to connections with my grandparents, with issues of abuse, and how this muddled my relationship to money. The entire time that I was working with this dream, allowing one association to lead me to the next, I used my feelings as a guide. When I'm forcing an interpretation, perhaps getting overly intellectual, it will feel contrived and lifeless. When I'm onto something, though, I'll feel intrigued and excited to go deeper. So allow your emotional response to guide you as you work through personal associations. And remember, if you start to feel a little lost, go back to what the dream is showing you. We talk about this in your third dreamwork lesson, where I offer different lenses through which to view a dream. For instance, if you're exploring personal associations with food because your dream took place at a buffet and you start to get a little lost, perhaps when you reread your dream summary, you see that whenever you try to fill your plate, something prevents you. The serving tongs are broken, or you drop your plate and when you stand back up, the buffet tray is empty. Rein in your associations by refocusing on the issue of trying to obtain nourishment and stuff keeps getting in the way. This brings us to the strange cause and effect that dreams display, and I want to expand on our discussion of this from your lesson emails. If we're looking at dreams through a waking life lens, we'll often miss important connections. For example, going back to my cash register dream where my parents were arguing, in waking life, arguing parents probably wouldn't cause a cash register to start malfunctioning. Or maybe they would, life is weird. But in a dream, these events have been strung together for a specific reason. This is why it's so useful to sketch out the dream's plot when we're working through our interpretation. Seeing how A leads to B leads to C can help us spot connections in waking life that we otherwise never connect, like me connecting conflict between my parents with difficulties in cash flow. So when working with your own dreams, break them down into plot points. Toss out the idea of quote-unquote ordinary cause and effect and really look at what the dream is showing you. For instance, when a bunch of cats run into your house, then your uncle shows up and wants to borrow your car. Or when you let your partner take charge of everything because you feel like you don't know what you're doing, then your partner turns into a vampire. Look at what leads to what in a dream, and then explore how that maps onto your waking life. Taking the herd of cats example, let's say your personal association with this is a feeling of being out of control, of problems quickly multiplying until you're way in over your head. Okay, so that's plot point A. This then leads to your uncle showing up and wanting to borrow your car. You work on your associations with your uncle and you come up with someone who's bossy and irritable and who you have a greater tendency to go into people-pleasing behavior with because you're afraid his anger will be directed at you. There's plot point B. And then the borrowing of the car. This you associate with not being able to direct your own life, having your ability to go out and do the things you want to do being taken from you. And that's plot point C. Stringing them together, when things start to feel out of control and overwhelming, you're more likely to go into people-pleasing mode, and this then leads to giving away your agency and ability to move forward. In waking life, you can pay attention to when you're starting to feel overwhelmed, knowing that this is a clue that inner people-pleasing parts might be on the verge of getting activated. What can you do to take care of yourself in this moment instead of waiting for those parts to get all riled up? Diving headfirst into trying to make sure everyone else around you is satisfied, aka people-pleasing, is not going to work as your dream is showing you. Maybe this looks like focusing on your own work for the next hour, putting your phone on Do Not Disturb and letting people know you'll be available once you're done, instead of immediately jumping to address everyone else's concerns while getting more and more scattered and overwhelmed by your own tasks that aren't getting done. By looking at what causes what in your dreams, you're able to spot patterns in your waking life that your ego routinely misses. How helpful is that? And speaking of cause and effect, dreams, which arise from the unconscious, have a weird relationship to time. You've probably noticed how, within a single dream, time can jump around quite a bit. You might find yourself in a scene from your childhood, followed immediately by an interaction with someone from the present day. While the ego perceives time as a one-way arrow, the unconscious does not share this limitation. This means that not only can it see into the past, it can also pierce the veil of the future. Now, I'll be honest, I was hesitant at first to mention this, because it's easy to hyperfixate on this aspect of dreams, ignoring the rich insights they're providing in favor of seeking flashy, precognitive meanings. But I would be remiss if I ignored this intuitive aspect of dreams. In my own life, quite recently, I had a dream where a relative called me, and when they started talking about their will, it became really hard to hear them. In waking life, a week after the dream, a relative called and said they wanted to add me as a beneficiary. Now, I could get super hung up on the fact that my dream foretold this encounter, and to be sure, that's pretty trippy. But it would be a loss if I failed to look at the rest of the dream. The fact that I was having a hard time hearing them as soon as we started talking about their will and other details of the dream all carried significance that was every bit as important as the goosebump-inducing prognosticatory aspect. At the beginning, I mentioned there were two things I wanted to cover today. And before we get to that second thing, I want to wrap up our dream work discussion with one final tidbit. I've heard dream work be compared to yoga. It's a discipline that the more you engage with it, the greater the benefits. And I couldn't agree more. You don't have to work with your dreams every day. Believe me, I know life gets busy and we don't always have time to journal our dreams first thing in the morning. But the more you can engage with this content, whether it's recording a voice memo of a dream to journal later, or journaling your dream quickly, then interpreting it when you have more time, the more you will heighten your intuitive capacity to understand what your unconscious is communicating, whether that's through dreams, waking fantasies, tarot cards, synchronicity, or your interactions with others. Think of it like keeping the conversation with the unconscious going, even if you don't have time for a lengthy discussion every single day. The more you check in by doing dream work, for instance, the less the unconscious has to use more drastic outer and inner world occurrences to get your attention. Now that we've got 2 months of Enchantment Lab under our belts, I want to briefly look at our original goal back when we started. Enchantment Lab is all about using practical magic to make your life better. And to that end, we've been working with the following process: how to choose your next steps, how to take effective action, how to evaluate and adjust your approach based on the results of those actions, and all the while, hopefully learning more about yourself. In the final lesson of Enchantment Lab, which will be in January, the perfect time for polishing your self-care systems, you'll get a lot of guidance on taking everything you've learned and assembling your own magical slash inner work practice, aka a Jungian magic practice, that fits into your life. But we can start laying the groundwork now. At this point in the lab, are you seeing new ways that divination combined with dream work can help you choose your next steps and take effective action? If we go back to the dream example with the herd of cats and the car-borrowing uncle, let's say in waking life you're now on the lookout for the people-pleasing urge, but instead of simply trying to force yourself not to give in to it, based on your dream, you know this urge arises when you're feeling overwhelmed. So now you can rewind a few steps and look at what you're feeling overwhelmed by. Now, let's say you use tarot to help you find a path out of the overwhelm, and you draw a card where the figure is being presented with a bunch of options, and just looking at the card, you feel the overwhelm starting to creep in. Now that you know that an abundance of options is part of the problem, from here, you ask a series of questions using your pendulum to help you come up with a different approach. Instead of leaving the decision of which project to focus on in the afternoon, when your decision-making energy is running low, you're going to experiment with mapping out your afternoon first thing in the morning. Then, when it's time to do the project, you're not faced with the daunting prospect of both figuring out which project to do and doing it. You can just get started. If we go back to our change-making process, after you try this for a while, it's useful to assess how well this is working. Does it help cut down on the overwhelm? In addition to checking in with how you feel, are your dreams offering any clues? Maybe the herd of cats, your uncle, or the borrowing of the car show up again, but in a different way. Or maybe the feeling tone of that original dream, the way you felt in the dream when the cats were streaming in and then your doorbell's ringing and there's your uncle demanding to borrow the car, maybe that feeling reappears in a different dream scenario. That's very interesting. Use the dream interpretation lessons to work with this new dream, seeing how your psyche is changing in regards to this dynamic. Remember, you can also use tarot and pendulums to fine-tune your process. You might draw a card with the question, "What else do I need to explore right now regarding," and fill in the blank with your situation. You could also draw one card representing the situation as it was when you began, and a second card depicting the situation now. How are these cards similar? How are they different? And how might you map these insights onto what you're experiencing in your day-to-day? With our October spellcasting lessons, you can then bring spells into the equation. Divination, dream work, and real-world experimentation will alert you to areas that are primed for change, like the people-pleasing and overwhelm dynamic we've been talking about. And you can use spell work to help shift this. What if you cast a spell that boosts your ability to cut through noise and choose the best option? Maybe your spell involves charging a crystal with this intention, and you place the crystal on your desk. Then, when you're making decisions in the morning, you hold the crystal, taking a moment to tune into that laser-focused energy. Once you start experimenting, I bet you can come up with all sorts of ways to take the intel you're receiving from divination, your dreams, and your real-life explorations, and translate that into highly customized spells. After all, what do you think is going to be more effective for you? A general money spell from a Witchy 101 book, or a spell that arose from personalized money guidance sourced directly from your relationship to your unconscious and an intimate understanding of your circumstances? Yep, there's no contest. Before we go, I want to give you a sneak peek of some really cool Jungian magic stuff I'm creating for you. When I originally conceived of Enchantment Lab, I intended to include a unit on working with internal family systems, aka IFS, in the context of practical magic, because this is something I do a lot in my own life. For those of you who are new to IFS, it's a method for working effectively with different parts within your psyche, things like the inner child or the inner critic, so that you can heal long-standing patterns and effect radical change in your thoughts, your feelings, and your behavior. So when I began writing the IFS lessons, it quickly became apparent that there was too much juicy content and no way to do it justice in a few emails. So I'm currently working on a standalone course called IFS for Magical People. This expanded format will allow me to share some really cool techniques, such as how to use your natal chart from astrology to identify key parts in your inner system, including parts that are generating some of the deepest, most influential conflicts playing out in your life. One example could be a conflict between a deep desire to love and be loved and to enjoy fulfilling connection, juxtaposed with the fear of losing yourself in a relationship where, before you know it, your needs have taken a back seat and you're depleted and bubbling with resentment. A Jungian magic approach to IFS, one that includes personalized astrological insights, for instance, can help you heal these fundamental conflicts, allowing you to experience more freedom and balance in your inner and outer life. IFS for Magical People will also be a space for me to share how I work with inner parts to cast spells. I have found this to be infinitely more effective than casting spells while my inner parts are actively working against my desired outcome, such as casting a money spell while I have parts who are very afraid more money will make me unlovable, so the whole time they're unconsciously working to derail the spell. By working to heal those parts, they are often then willing to contribute their energy to the spell, which not only increases the spell's success rate, it's also one of the most profoundly healing things that I have ever experienced. One in which I can actually feel my inner system working together, a wonderful contrast to feeling divided, confused, and at odds with myself. If IFS for Magical People sounds like your cup of tea, I'll be sharing updates in about a month. And as always, Portal members get 20% off all courses. So if you're listening to this and you're not a part of the Portal yet, I hope to see you there. Just go to realmagic.school to sign up. Let's end with a passage from Jung, something that I came across in rereading Volume 9 of his collected works, Archetypes and the Collective Unconscious. This is from paragraphs 44 to 45. In the end, one has to admit that there are problems which one simply cannot solve on one's own resources. Such an admission has the advantage of being honest, truthful, in accord with reality, and this prepares the ground for the compensatory reaction from the collective unconscious. You are now more inclined to give heed to a helpful idea or intuition, or to notice thoughts which had not been allowed to voice themselves before. Perhaps you will pay attention to the dreams that visit you at such moments, or will reflect on certain inner and outer occurrences that take place at just this time. If you have an attitude of this kind, then the helpful powers slumbering in the deeper strata of man's nature can come awake and intervene. For helplessness and weakness are the eternal experience and the eternal problem of mankind. To this problem, there is also an eternal answer. Otherwise, it would have been up with humanity a long time ago. When you have done everything that possibly could be done, the only thing that remains is what you could still do if only you knew it. The necessary and needful reaction from the collective unconscious expresses itself in archetypally formed ideas. End quote. May the helpful powers slumbering in the deeper strata of your nature awaken and intervene, guiding you on the next steps of your journey. Thanks for listening.